I'm Dr. Brian Goldman, host of the CBC podcast, The Dose. Each week, we answer vital health questions that will help you thrive, like, what does my mental health have to do with my gut? How can I prevent melanoma? How much sleep do I really need? And how can I manage my health without a family doctor? I chat with the top experts to bring you the latest evidence in plain language, all in about 20 minutes. Find The Dose on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Okay, give me the 3-minute update.
We had a nice time. We're having a nice time together. It's been really good. Except for the chronic headache I've had, it hasn't left me. And I'm not sleeping at all. And I don't know why.
Don't know why headache, don't know why I'm not sleeping?
The two things together, I feel like it's neck tension. Mm-hmm. I also feel like there's something going on inside.
Okay.
I feel like I always feel like my tears are really close to the surface. And I'm not sure if some kind of memory got triggered with all those drunk guys in the pool.
Okay.
I don't know, but I've been like this.
Okay. So something got stirred up.
Yeah. And I think there's some past crap.
Sure, that makes
waiting
a lot of
for
sense.
Me.
I'm Hillary McBride. I'm a clinical counselor, and this is Other People's Problems, a show about real life therapy sessions between me and my clients. We're opening up the door to sessions that are normally totally confidential to show you what it looks like when brave people decide to get help. This is a session with my client who wants to be called Layla. She'd gone away with her husband to a hotel, and an altercation with some drunk guys at the pool triggered a memory of sexual assault that happened years ago. This episode, we'll talk about some of the horrible things that happened to Layla. We also begin to process those traumatic memories by helping Layla's brain and body know that the trauma is over and that it's not happening again in that moment. So please listen ahead carefully, especially if you're a survivor of sexualized violence. If you feel like it's too much, too difficult or unsafe for you to listen to this episode, don't. Or listen with someone who knows your story and can help you if something gets stirred up. I should mention that we're also going to be using a tool called EMDR. I've talked about exactly how that works in an earlier episode of this podcast, so listen to episode 5 with Patty discussing birth trauma, or episode 7 with Belle discussing eating disorders to learn more. This week, we're also releasing a conversation about this episode in sexualized violence with a survivor and an advocate, Trisha Bapti. It's another place to keep this much-needed conversation going. I met Layla a few years ago because she was invited to come do some therapy following an injury, and her insurance company was going to pay for the treatment. Over the course of therapy, it became aware that the thing that she was seeking treatment for was actually just at the surface of years and years and years of abuse. Abuse in her family home growing up, abuse from strangers, and abuse in her family even at this present day. Layla's courage to allow us to share her session is extraordinary. So we've done something we've never done before on Other People's Problems. We altered her voice.
What's going on right now?
I don't know. There's just so much. It all feels like the stuff that...
You just like went blank for a second. It was so unlike you. You just... There was nothing, no expression on your face.
I went somewhere else.
Yeah. What would you
I feel like I need to protect myself.
Yeah. From?
Oh, shit. I really do think that it just brought up a really bad... It found a bad memory.
And so you need to protect yourself from...
experiencing it again.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I'm safe here. I need to find it and I need to deal with it.
What just happened there? There was a switch.
because I trust this process, and I, some other part of my brain said, no, 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 we can do this. We can do this.
What part is that? Who is that?
Me sitting here. Mm. This is strong. That's the strong me.
Adult, present day.
Yeah.
You, yeah.
Yeah, and that abuse was not so long ago. Mm. It wasn't childhood trauma.
Okay.
I feel like if we go into it, I'm going to find it pretty fast.
Okay. And so the adult, present day you has said,
I can do this.
I can do this.
I can do this. I'm with you, and I'm here, and I'm safe.
And there's another part of you that says, I'm really scared.
It's really scary.
Yeah, and what part is that?
The part that got abused.
Yeah. So what does she need to know?
It's not going to happen again.
Yeah. We're going to take care of her. We hear that she's scared. She doesn't need to pretend she's not scared. It's okay to be scared about bad things that have happened.
There are a lot of people that saw it and never helped.
Wow. And it's over.
My God, I didn't remember this at all.
Is this a
new
one?
I didn't write it down, yes. I buried this one pretty deep.
This is a good moment for us to stop and slow down for a second. This is a person who's been through a lot of trauma. And a lot of it has been sexualized trauma, both by people she knows and people she doesn't know. As you're listening to the story, hear the parallels. She'd been at a hotel with her husband and heard lots of noise from people sitting around a pool. Those two things are enough to trigger a response in the body that says, this feels a lot like the trauma. When the assault happened that she's about to describe, it was around a pool, at a hotel, with lots of people making lots of noise. Sometimes our minds have these really amazing ways of protecting us from the pain that we've been through or are going through, and we call that dissociation. It's almost like our conscious brain disconnects. And so without even being consciously aware of it, she has accessed something in the past that's really awful. And her body's telling her that it's time to pay attention to that. A lot of times when people have been through sexual trauma, the body is something that feels dangerous, a liability, a place that reminds us of how we've been violated. But here in Layla's story, you see that the body is also the path to wisdom and healing. That the body is her way of gauging if she's unsafe or not, or if something needs to be addressed or not.
I'm going to take a few notes just so that I can come back to them later. Can you think about the thing that you're thinking about?
No.
And can you...
I can find it. I know where it is now.
Okay. And can you identify the worst part? Even if you don't tell me out loud, can you search through that memory?
There were several. I was raped repeatedly that night. Grad. I just put it in a box and buried the box.
Yeah.
Really, really deep.
And when you think about that memory of grad being raped all those times,
I was just looking for acceptance and compassion when I went down from the hotel room to the pool.
Mm.
My dress was ripped, and I thought I'd been through the worst thing I'd ever been through.
Yeah. And when you remember that, how disturbing does it feel right now out of 10 to remember
15.
That? Okay. And what's the negative belief about yourself that goes along
with that? I deserved it.
Yeah.
I deserved what I got because that's what they told me. I deserved it. They were all in the pool. The girl house for some days.
Open your eyes, please. Yeah, I want you to be here with me right now.
I throw up.
Good, yeah, just grab the bucket.
The thing that normally happens when we go through an event is that our brain puts a timestamp on it and it says, this is over, this happened in the past. But when it's traumatic content, our brain doesn't do that. It kind of holds it in this timeless limbo where part of our nervous system feels like the trauma is still happening. So as she's talking about it, we're accessing a memory that her body doesn't know is over. And it elicits a response, a disgust response. Disgust is a feeling that comes with a physiological nausea reflex. It's actually meant to keep us safe in unsafe situations by saying, there's something that's happening in my body and it's not quite right. I'm going to make sure that if there's anything that's in me that's not supposed to be in me, I'm going to get it out. And I think what's really important too is that when someone's been through trauma, the stillness and the safety and the groundedness of the clinician is really important for maintaining a safe environment. They need to be able to look at me and know I'm not freaked out, both because I know that that's something that happens for her and because I know that's something that happens for people when they're processing trauma, but almost most importantly, because I want her to know that she doesn't have to worry about trying to protect me in the session.
Does it help if you keep your eyes open? The nausea?
Maybe.
It's easier to get stuck in the long ago, in the way back if...
Yeah, if my eyes are closed in there.
Yeah.
I'm right there.
Yeah, so for the time being, we want you to be here.
Okay. My boyfriend broke up with me that night, and then he raped me.
Wow.
I wasn't ready to have sex yet, and I told him, so he was a baby, and he broke up with me, and I was crying.
Yeah.
So yeah. I paid for a really expensive hotel room, and what did I think it was for? And I said, I thought we were all sharing it to, you know, have a party. And that was the point. All of us were going to party. And he's like, yeah, well, that was the kind of party I meant.
So it probably tried to make you feel guilty.
Yeah. He said I was immature. And I was never going to grow up. Parents, though. And I said, no, I'm not ready. I don't feel ready for this. I just need some time. He was really angry. So angry.
Can you stay with your breath for a second?
Wasting the room on me. And
come back to your breath. I want you to slow down.
I wanted to stay with him. So stupid. Why would I want to be with somebody who would treat me that way? He was really always making me feel, you know, just a little stupid. Just a little, you know, not good enough.
Yeah. And when we've been treated really cruelly, we become used to it. And so when other people do it, we don't notice it in the same way. And you had been through so much abuse up until that point. And you're a totally different woman now looking back on it. You can see that that was not okay behavior, but then it probably felt really good just to be liked.
Told me he loved me.
Yeah.
Told me, you know, when I get my grades up, that'll show them how smart I am. When I lose more weight, that'll show them how pretty I am. And it was always that kind of language. He was university. It was in his first year university. Mm.
When you think about that night, what stands out as the worst part, or what's the image that comes to mind?
Oh, Hillary, there's just a flood of images.
Mm-hmm. Is there a symbolic image? Something that captures all of it?
I'm holding my throat down.
Okay. Yeah.
I felt like I was going to die.
Yeah.
And I was constricted, like, because he said, shut up, shut up, shut up. I couldn't stand up for myself anymore. Mm-hmm. He was a lot bigger.
Yeah.
And I was really scared.
Of course you were, yeah. You have your hand at your neck right now.
And then I ran through the hotel and I found the other couples, the girls that we were supposedly renting the room with. They were all down in the pool.
Yeah.
Everybody got a turn. The girls helped me down.
Yeah, if you need to throw up, that's okay. Try opening your eyes. I'm just going to come move closer to you. I'm going to grab my other chair. Yeah.
You're really close.
Too close?
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for telling me. Yeah. Yeah. If you can open your eyes, just follow my hand. Stay with your breath. Really good. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Doesn't feel like a long time ago, Hillary.
I know. Stay with my hand.
Feels like yesterday.
Yeah, and that's what happens when we have trauma. So our brain stores it differently, and it stores it like it might happen again, or it just happened. Stay with my hand here. We're going to try and make it so that you know that it happened a long time ago, and then it's not going to happen again. Take a breath. Very good. Very, very good. Really good. You're doing so well. Beautiful work. Those breaths are fantastic. What are you noticing right now?
I'm calm. I just feel my legs are shaking. I feel ashamed and I feel sick to my stomach.
What do your legs want to do?
Run.
Okay, just imagine yourself running. To see your legs carrying you very far away. Okay, just stay with my hand. You're doing really well. So, let's go back to that night in the hotel room. And I want you to think about, while you're following my hand, I want you to think about what you needed to have happen. So maybe somebody comes in and pushes him off, or the cops barge in, whatever it is. And then see yourself free, see yourself running far away.
But I did run.
Yeah, we're going to play a different story. We're going to run far away, and this time we're not going to go down to the pool. We're going to go really far away. No, we're not going to go to the pool. So I want you to see yourself running away.
No.
You got out of there. Follow my hand. Okay.
I didn't get out.
No, we're just imagining a different story. I know you didn't, but we're imagining what you deserved.
I can't get in there.
Okay, just follow my hand.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I'm just going to do it one step at a time.
Okay.
And it's me in the room with you here. You and me. And that was a very long time ago.
Okay.
And you're safe. You got out. And it's over. It's over. Yeah.
What if someone you love asks you to help them die? What would you say? This is the powerful question at the heart of The Ultimate Choice. The series follows the journey of Michael and his wife Anne as they grapple with his request to choose the way he wants to die. I'm Rob Cribb, and through their story, I learned a lot about my own family. I hope the show is a way to start conversations many of us want to have, but rarely do. The Ultimate Choice is out now.
What you hear as we're talking about this is this desire for her to run away. And what that's doing is it's showing us that there's an activation of the mobilization responses. All of these things that our body is supposed to do and is wired to do when we're in threatening or dangerous situations, those things got shut off for her because of so much abuse. And what we're hearing in this audio is that that's starting to come back. The idea that her legs could carry her out of a dangerous situation. And often as the mobilization response is coming back, people actually get the energy in their body to do the thing that they never got to do. It's like that tendency, we would call it the mobilization tendency, actually gets stuck in off mode. And then when the switch gets flipped back on because the body knows that the trauma's not actually happening anymore, then all of the things that needed to happen at the time get activated. So sometimes people feel surges of energy in their legs or arms, or I'll have people actually run on the spot in my office to use up and to practice that mobilization tendency to remind their brain-body system that they're out of there. But I'm also not saying to her, you should have just stood up and run out of the room. This is about us knowing that what happened happened, but that we can tell the story a different way and help her feel empowered enough that this doesn't ever need to happen again in the same way that it happened there. Because sometimes in situations of sexual assault, a part of our brain actually decides that the best possible scenario is actually to dissociate, to become limp, to freeze, or to become unconscious. So the rape myth that so many of us have heard, if you didn't want it, you would have left or run away, we can actually disprove that using neuroscience by saying that these systems that get engaged to keep us alive actually sometimes shut us down. And that what we want is to have those systems that shut us down not be utilized in our daily life when we don't need them anymore. So therapy is a way of helping to reorganize the nervous system so that you don't need to shut down when you don't need to be shut down. But if you were in a situation of sexual assault and you froze, or flopped, or became limp, or became unconscious, that was not a conscious choice, and it was not your fault that you stayed.
It happened, and it was real, and you're not crazy.
It's not my shit.
Yeah. I'm just gonna tap your knees. Is that okay?
Hillary, I told my mom. I tried to take my mom. She told me I was a slut. I set the whole thing up and I got what I deserved, whatever it was.
Oh my. Yeah, so it kept going on. There was an incident in the hotel, but even when you got home...
It wasn't over for me.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many layers of hurt.
What happens when we tell someone that we've been through something painful and they blame us for it is that it actually compounds the trauma, makes it even bigger, more painful, and integrated into how we see ourselves. We can recover from sexual assault. We can recover from violence. We can recover from being victimized. But we need the people around us to show us that the trauma is over by believing us and responding to us in a way that actually does the opposite of what the trauma does.
Yeah, just feel the touch of my fingers on your knees. Hear the sound of my voice. Feel your body on my couch.
Yeah. Jesus.
It's so easy to get stuck in that loop that plays over and over again.
Yeah. I played that loop for 8 years. But be touched or touch or be with the new one.
Yeah. This is hard stuff. But you're doing exactly what you need to be doing.
My God. You grip my neck. Keep me back. Help me face down while three other guys got their turn. The girls cheered on and out layers. Who does that to another human being? Is that possible?
Just stay with my hand. Good. There's your breath. Nice. Sounds like a very deep let it go.
I can look at you now. I can look at you before.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see it from far away now. Okay. I'm wanting it.
Let's keep going. Okay, another big breath in and then out. I want you to think about him having his hand on your neck. Follow my hand.
It felt like I couldn't
stay breathe. With my hand. Stay with my hand. Really good. What are you noticing right now?
I don't feel afraid anymore.
What do you notice?
I feel in my body, I feel calm, and I feel kind of like I'm watching a movie over here.
And what's the story you want to tell about yourself?
I got away.
Good, let's go with that. Hold those together in your mind.
Okay. I got away.
Let's go with that. What's going on with your neck?
Oh, it just popped.
Mm. What about your headache?
I feel something weird, like kind of shifted.
Mm.
A lot of people think about therapy as two people sitting in a room using words to remember the past. And the more we learn about the neuroscience of trauma and what happens in our nervous system during a trauma and after a trauma, the more we realize that actually sometimes what we need is to prove to the body in new ways that the trauma's over. One of those ways is to help the body move in a way that it wasn't able to move when the trauma occurred. If people's hands were tied down during a trauma, it can be really important to revisit the memory and also get the experience of movement in your hands. So what we're doing is we're helping the brain go, oh yeah, that happened, but the proof that I'm through it is that I can move my hands now. And this is very unconscious. And what I mean by that is it's happening on a level of the brain that's underneath the thinking part of the brain. So what we're trying to do is titrate. That's a word that we use to talk about moving in and out of that position or that state of being. We're titrating in and out of that position for her to help her brain get the sense that she can move freely out of the position and learning to associate that position with a sense of being safe instead of it being associated with the trauma.
Is there any movement that when you put your neck in a certain direction, it brings up any emotion for you?
Yeah.
Can you put your neck there?
Yeah.
I'm just gonna tap your knees, hold it there. Yeah. Good. Beautiful work. Now slowly move your neck back to center. And then back again. Good.
It's not painful to turn here now.
Okay, let's keep going back to center and then back again. Proving to your body that what happened when your neck was like that, but that's over now.
It just released.
Okay. So keep going a few more times.
It's never done that. It's never done that, Hillary.
Okay, stay with it. We're going to finish it. Yeah, go all the way to the side. Okay, back. Really nice breath. Beautiful. Oh, look at that day. Really deep breath there.
Oh, another pop.
I want you to go inside and scan your body. And tell me what you notice.
I don't feel like throwing up. The chest constriction is gone. My stomach doesn't hurt. The back of my neck and my head don't hurt. How did you do that?
You did that.
No, I didn't.
Your body did that.
That just revealed.
Okay, just notice your hand and let's move your hand in towards a fist. Good. And keep moving your arm if you're able. Oh, there's a big release. What are you noticing?
When I said I'm okay, there was a little part of me that was like,
Is that like facetious, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like I don't believe it.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe you're not okay yet, but maybe you did get out. Maybe that's where we stay.
Yeah.
I got out.
I got out.
Yeah.
That feels good.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
What else have I buried?
Buried is an interesting word. Sometimes we don't consciously remember things. Sometimes we dissociate. Sometimes we don't have a reason to remember something until something triggers it up.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not so worried about that question, what else you've buried, as we're dealing with stuff as it comes up. And all of that stuff is contributing to a story that you've carried for a long time, which says I'm not lovable and I'm broken and bad and I don't deserve to be cared for and all that kind of stuff. And so we're just knocking out things. Yeah.
I like that image.
Mm-hmm. And so we're knocking those things out one by one, and pretty soon that story, I don't deserve to be taken care of, I'm not lovable, I'm broken, that won't have any legs to stand on.
I'm looking forward to that day.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm on the road.
Oh, you sure are. You sure are. Yeah. So, five things in the room that you can see. Any five. Yeah.
Your water bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Computer, microphone, your shoes.
Good. Four things that your body or skin are touching.
The couch.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of my favorite ways of doing grounding with a client. It can help a person feel like they're back in the room, back in the present, and can just bring to their awareness that on one more level, there's some proof that they're not in the trauma anymore. So this specific kind of grounding that I'm doing with her, we call in the field 5-4-3-2-1. It's five things that you see, four things that your body or your skin are touching, three things that you're hearing, two things that you smell, and one thing that you taste. But what it's actually forcing is a regional cerebral blood flow back to the area of your brain that's responsible for a sense of logic and rationality. So we're just intentionally activating those parts of the brain to help her feel like she can walk out of the session her best and most normal self. This might be something for you to try even after listening to this episode if it felt like it was really difficult for you to listen to. Or perhaps before a stressful meeting or when you feel like you're having a hard time seeing things clearly and logically and rationally. Slow down, take a breath, and look. Look for five things that are around you. And as you look for them, see if you can name them to yourself in your head. And then move on to four things that your body or your skin are touching. Three things that you can hear. And two things that you can smell. And lastly, something that you can taste. You might notice that saliva comes back into your mouth. As that happens, that's a sign that your parasympathetic nervous system has been activated again and you're no longer in a state of distress. Saliva is one of your body's way of saying, I'm at rest, I'm safe here, and I'm ready to eat some delicious food.
How are you doing right now?
I feel exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I hiked the North Shore Mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah. What the hell you did? I swear to God, some voodoo thing was amazing because I can't, things are changing all the time now, all the time. My expectations are changing, my reactions are changing, and I constantly say no, or, you know, to him, I think I need a break.
Good for you.
I can't deal with this right now. We'll need to talk about it later.
Good for you.
Because I can feel.
Oh, you're emotionally regulating. Good for you. Nice.
If you've been through sexualized violence or trauma of any kind, you're not alone. It's okay to ask for help. And there are resources in every city that are designed to help you feel like you don't have to go through the journey of healing alone. Look for your local rape support groups, for the sexualized violence support groups and centers. A lot of times they can even help with reporting if that's something that you want to do. And there's also crisis lines that you can call that are open 24 hours a day, toll-free. If something gets stirred up for you or something happens and you just need someone to talk to, they can be there with you and can also point you in the direction of more resources if you need that. If you want to hear more about healing and recovery from sexualized violence, check out the podcast extra release this week, a conversation I have with activist and survivor Trisha Bapty about what healing really looks like. I'm Hillary McBride. Other People's Problems was created and produced by Jody Martinson, co-produced and original music by Lee Rosevere. RF Nirani is the executive producer of CBC Podcasts. You can find more episodes plus podcast extras at cbc.ca/OPP or wherever you get your podcasts. In the next episode of Other People's Problems,
when we had to go to the hospital, this is not at all what we thought it was going to be. And the people that we had put in place to protect us and make sure that something like this wasn't going to happen, I no longer had faith in. And it was like everything was just kind of spinning out of control.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.